Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, it's time to get real. Oh, yeah. It's the newest spirit.
Spirituality.
Yeah, keep your ears open for this one, man.
Tuesday. I'm sitting outside actually looking out at the mountains, and I am so excited because one of my favorite recurring guests, Barbara Berger, is with us today, and we are going to be talking about her latest book, Are You Happy Now? 10 Ways to Live a Happy Life. And I'm just going to bring Barbara on right now because, you know what, no introductions needed. No introductions. Hi, Barbara, all the way from Copenhagen.
Hello. It's also been a beautiful day here in Copenhagen. Sunshine.
Yeah.
But now it's getting colder.
Now, are you a fan of the cold, or are you like the summer? What do you prefer? Do you have a preference?
Well, I try to like whatever is, because that gives me the most peace of mind.
That's right. And you know what? I love that answer, and let me piggyback on that because
mm-hmm.
I used this summer. And honestly, when we have preferences, well, let me say me. When I have preferences, I'm not as happy as I could be, as opposed to just accepting it all, just like you said.
Yeah. Well, especially if you live in some place like Denmark, where it's cold, rainy, dark a lot of the year. I mean, if you want to live in Southern California and you live here, you might not be too happy, right?
So. Well, this is so crazy. I like the cold, dark, damp weather and rain,
well,
and I'm here in sunny California.
Okay, well, it's funny that you say that because I really like it too, actually, so I'm in the right place. Well, you have to come and visit me, right?
Listen, don't ask me again because I'll be on the next plane. I'm definitely going to visit you, I promise. That's going to happen. We're here to discuss in depth. First of all, you wrote this fabulous book, Are You Happy Now? And I like the way that you posed the question. So your title of the book is actually a question to your audience. And now they have to sit and they have to ponder, am I happy now?
Yeah.
And so the title already is a great beginning. And then you give us 10 ways to live a happy life. Can you sum up your 10 ways really quick before we get into the specifics?
Well, I think maybe I should just go back and sort of give my little introduction, which
the people
who haven't sort of heard about this book yet. This is a book that came about when I wasn't trying to write a book. It came about, it was born one day when I was laying on my sofa thinking about, I had just had a momentous birthday, and I was thinking about now I was really getting old, and I had lived this long, dramatic life, and I had been a spiritual teacher my whole life, and a therapist, and all the things that I'd done, and, you know, like, what had I learned from all of that experience, and what did I need to remember? I was talking to myself, what do you need to remember, Barbara, to live the rest of your life a little bit more happily? So I was actually laying on my sofa pondering that great question, and then I started to make this list, and I just started writing down what I thought I needed to remember based on all my life experience and all the spirituality I've studied and so on and so forth. I made this list of 10 points, and I think I'm going to read them now. The first point is and was, accept what is. The second point, want what you have. Third point, be honest with yourself. Fourth point, investigate your stories. Number five, mind your own business.
Mm-hmm.
Number six, follow your passion and accept the consequences. Number seven, do the right thing and accept the consequences. Number eight, deal with what is in front of you and forget the rest. Number nine, know what is what. And number 10, learn to see beyond impermanence. So that was my little list to myself. And then I thought, well, that's a really interesting list. If you're really going to remember this, and if you're going to, you know, be able to live by it, maybe you should write down why you think these 10 points are so important. And so I started scribbling away, and I wrote and I wrote and I wrote, and suddenly I realized that, you know, that it was growing into this book-like thing. And then I thought, well, maybe other people could benefit from my little list and my little exercise. And then I showed it to my publisher here in Scandinavia, and she loved it. So it was like a book that was just born by itself.
Mm-hmm.
The interesting thing also about it is it's now, it just came out in the U.S., but it's already out in 15 other languages, and people just love this book. So working on what I needed to remember somehow has touched and inspired a lot of other people. So that's really cool.
I love
so that's
that.
Sort of the
I love. I mean, it sounds
yeah.
like the it's the perfect beginning of a book. It just like giving birth to a baby. It just came out naturally, and it wasn't even planned. It just feels like it was an inspiration and just guidance by the universe. I love
that.
Yeah.
And
I love the fact that you're sharing and being open with your life and what helped you.
Right. Well, as I say in the beginning of the book, you know, where's the proof that these 10 things work? And then I say, my answer is, well, when I follow my own advice, I actually feel happy. So, I mean, it's, you know, we're all work in progress. We're all a work in progress. And so these 10 points, as far as I can see, for me anyway, is a work in progress. Sometimes I'm better at it, and sometimes, you know, I'm not so good at following my own advice.
That's so interesting. One of my favorite quotes is, you cannot have a happy ending to an unhappy journey. And then when you're talking about... not always following your own advice, it's interesting because this is my new thing, Barbara. This is my new thing. I am getting I'm at a certain age. I am so tired of beating myself up and, oh, you could have been better. Oh, you could have said this, and just relaxing with everything I do and everything I say and all my behaviors, and just being okay with it and knowing that in reality, the only opinion that I want the only opinion that matters is my own opinion of myself. And I want to be able to look in the mirror and say, you're pretty special. And regardless
well, I think
of what
that really,
I
Yeah,
I think it's really interesting what you're saying because, you know, I work as a therapist, so I talk to people every day. And you and I, we're not unusual in the sense that we have such high standards for ourselves and we're so perfectionistic and we beat ourselves up when we don't live up to our, you know, our own expectations. I mean, really, the person who's beating you up the most is you, and the person who's beating me up the most is me, and that's true of all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And, but one of the things I've learned is actually – there is something called moderation, which for people like you and me is maybe a pretty new concept. But the voice of sanity or of moderation, you know, it's the voice inside, the voice of wisdom that says, you know, that there's none of us who are perfect. There are no perfect human beings, that we're all a work in process. And yes, you know, we did as good as we could back then because with the information and understanding we had back then, and today we're doing the best we can with the understanding and information we have today, and we'll learn a little bit more, and maybe tomorrow we'll be a little bit, you know, but it's like this slow process, and there is something called healthy self-improvement, which is not the same as trying for this, you know, whatever we think perfection is, which is also just an illusion, because there is no final solution, no end game. It's a constant evolution. So just to make peace with that, I mean, just think about the feeling of peace and relaxation that you have now. If you can make peace with the concept that you are, you know, this unfinished work of art and that you're evolving and that, yeah, you make mistakes, but that's how you learn. I mean, how else are we going to learn? So we've got such unrealistic expectations to ourselves and to life, really, which is actually what this whole book is about.
Mm-hmm. I love that you said that. I'm just going to throw this in because I don't believe in there are any mistakes. I don't believe in mistakes. I really don't. I
totally agree.
Yeah,
totally
yeah. There
agree.
Are no
it's,
mistakes.
I mean, but also because like, how would you define the word? If you even try to define what is a mistake, you're already at the point where, you know, that somebody has a definition of right and wrong according to who. You know, like my mother always used to say to me that I had made so many mistakes. And one day, because I was, you know, a hippie and I ran away from America and I was macrobiotic and I married a foreigner and I did all the things that she thought were totally against the happy life. But her idea of a happy life was, you know, you marry a doctor and you live in the suburbs and you play golf every day. And I didn't do that. So I made a mistake, and then I realized that she was always saying I made so many mistakes, but she was really just saying that I did something different than her way.
Exactly.
So I mean, the word mistake is like a mistake according to who? You know, who's the judge here?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I love that. One of the things that I also am doing is, you know, we talked about it before, about where do we get all of these ideas and right and wrong and mistakes and good and bad and judgment and expectations and attachments. Where did all of these concepts come from? I mean, if you're a 2-year-old, a 3-year-old, you're not in say you have a obese 3-year-old, you know, really fat, chunky little 3-year-old, they're not going to feel bad about their weight. They're not going to feel bad about the way they look. They're not going to feel bad about anything. And so all of this feeling bad and these conditionings, it's really about letting go and putting them in the trash and moving on and just letting go of all the stuff that was learned or that was taught or brainwashed or whatever you want to call it.
I think that it's really important to understand that the innocence of consciousness in the sense that when the child is born, it doesn't have all these stories. And then, you know, we're born into a family, and the family has their belief system, and we're born into a certain culture with a certain religion, a certain society, and we're programmed. And a child doesn't have a truth detector. A child doesn't have, you know, like an antenna up that says, oh, mommy, is it true? I mean, children are just innocent because consciousness is innocent and it believes whatever it's told. And then so then by the time we get, you know, to school and we become teenagers, we've already got – it's like our hard disk is filled with all these programs.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
And, And then we just operate on automatic. I mean, that's actually what awakening is about. I mean, my last book was called The Awakening Human Being, because I tried to outline this process of how consciousness and how the mind works. So because once we start to see that that's what's going on, then we, for the first time in our lives, we really have a chance of, you know, identifying our programs and actually saying, is this serving me? Do I want to continue, you know, operating on this belief system? Or is there a more, you know, loving, kind, wise way to navigate through life? So
making,
it's a really...
Yeah.
Making different choices.
Yeah, I love that.
But we can't really make different choices until we become aware of this mechanism. I mean, that's the reason why all of my books basically are about this mechanism, the way the mind works, because that's the key to freedom. Until we become aware of this, we really, you could say, we're innocent victims of forces, of a mechanism that we don't understand. So,
mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about, because I was really, I've said this before, but your writings on the mental laws is so important. And you also offer that as a free download on your site.
Right.
And your website is beamteam.com.
Yeah.
The mental laws, if a lay person on the street just starts reading it, I mean, I can't see anybody not understanding those, what you wrote.
I'm so happy to hear that, because that was my goal. It actually, the mental laws were born actually. I wrote a book called The Road to Power: Fast Food for the Soul. That's a long time ago, and that's the book of mine that has been this international bestseller, which is about the way the mind works. And I was on a radio show here for the new millennium at the end of 1999 turning to 2000, where
uh-huh.
the host was asking me about this other book. How could it be that all the things I wrote were so, you know, were so popular, and the people were getting so much better by reading this stuff? And then I started explaining on the radio, actually. It just sort of, I was sort of inspired to call it, well, there are these mental laws. And the program was, you know, so popular, the radio, they had this telephone storm, and it was on Danish national radio. They had to send it again. And it just sort of came to me, and this was like, you know, people who weren't really into this kind of stuff, but this explanation was so simple that when I got home that night, I thought, gosh, I better write that down. And then
yeah.
I started writing it down. And so it has actually been the basing of our teaching here in Scandinavia for the last 15 years about. And people have said to me stuff like, you know, the mental laws, that we should be teaching this to our kids in school. And so it's that's the reason why, just to our listeners, the mental laws, they're on the website, beamteam.com, and you can go in and you can download the mental laws for free, because I believe, and Tim believes, that this information is so important that we just want to share it with everyone. So I'm glad that you say that anyone can understand it, because that was I tried to do it so simply and make it in a way that everyone could test it for themselves to see if the information was correct. You know, that was my starting point. Don't believe me. This is, you know, try this exercise. Try to notice this and see what you discover. Confirm it for yourself.
Mm-hmm. That was so powerful about it. Not only was it simple that anyone would understand. I mean, because when I started reading it, even knowing what I knew, but when I listened,
right.
when I read what you wrote, it clarified things even more for me.
Oh,
and
thank you.
And I love the fact that you didn't even use any spiritual, universal, any of that kind of language on purpose.
Right, on purpose. I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that's also one of the things I've learned from living in Scandinavia. Scandinavia is probably the most non-religious place in the world. It's very enlightened here, but people are very intellectual. You have to be able to explain things without using any kind of mystical terms or language. So I've become rather good at that because of where I live. So
mm-hmm.
So that was also part of that exercise, to try to find plain, simple words to explain this phenomena. But the information is so liberating. So please, people who are listening, go in and download it and see it doesn't make a big change in your life. And everyone who really looks at it tells me that it has really brought major transformation to their awareness of what's going on.
Okay, now you just inspired me. I don't give out Christmas gifts, but that is exactly what I'm going to do this year. I'm going to download Mental Laws, make a lot of copies, and that's my gift to people. I'm not joking. That's exactly what I'm going to do.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, because it's just, I don't know, in either people are going to pick it up or they're not. I mean, either they're going to digest it or not. But it's so important, and I just love that foundation. Let's get back to your book.
Mm-hmm.
You wanted to discuss something specific this time, and what was our specific topic?
Well, I think I don't want to just talk about that, but I wanted to mention in terms of this book especially, of all the books that I've written, that this book is a powerful combination of the spiritual approach and the psychological therapeutic approach, which is a bit different than my other books. The other books, like The Mental Law and The Awakening Human Being, they're much more about the nature of consciousness the whole way through, whereas this book, Are You Happy Now, and I think it's part of the reason why it's also so popular, it's very down to earth. It has chapters which are really about the more psychological, therapeutic approach to living a happy life. And and the background for this combination is that because I've been teaching for the last 20, 30 years here in Scandinavia, spirituality, and been working with people as a therapist, I have discovered that people who are into spirituality or traditional practices like meditation or whatever, this pathway, these kind of people, they often, even though they make great advances in terms of understanding the nature of consciousness and they attain a higher awareness and so on, they often still have great difficulties in dealing with the problems of everyday life. So I had discovered that, you know, the problems of dealing with everyday life, and by that I mean, you know, just navigating with your friends and with your family and, you know, learning to set limits and take care of yourself and be assertive, and this kind of stuff is often overlooked, or anyway, if it is present in their awareness, it's very problematic. So this book has some chapters where I deal a lot with, you know, taking care of yourself, setting limits, learning to be assertive, finding out, you know, how to manage in daily life also. So I don't know if that speaks to you. I don't know you that well, but I know that it speaks to a lot of people here anyway.
Well, what do you mean you don't know me that well? Of course you know me. Yes, it does. And when you were talking, basically what you're saying is you can talk the talk, but you need to walk the walk. It's about talking it and walking it. And that is, it's so interesting. Oh, my goodness. That is what I do in every moment. I mean, every moment in my life, I interact with people all the time. I'm not their therapist, but I know I have coworkers, I have people on the bus, I have people in the shopping, you know, in the stores. So all of it is learning how to choose how you're going to react. It's all about choosing your reactions to whatever happens in your life.
And
you're talking about everyday life, and let's get more specific with it, with a great example.
Well, I think a good example would be that, because I know I've suffered from it myself for years, it's the idea that, you know, if you're spiritual, that means that you should be loving and kind to other people. I know personally, and I can see it all the time with the people who come to me, that belief, that if I'm spiritual, I'm going to be loving and kind, it gets us into so much trouble, because what does that actually mean? How does that play out? And what I have observed through my own experience and talking and working with a lot of other people is that it comes from a misunderstanding of, you know, that each one of us is an individual and each one of us has a right to be here and each one of us is different, and having healthy boundaries and having good people skills. People who have this sort of loving and kind sort of thought, they often end up being doormats. They think that, you know, if someone is abusive towards them, and I'm not talking just about physical violence, I'm talking about, you know, it can be in terms of their conversation or the way they treat them or whatever, that they don't have a right to, you know, to say, you know, so far and no further. They don't know how to be assertive. They don't know how to say no in a good way. So this loving and kind sort of umbrella, you could say, for people who are spiritual, I really, really think it's something that we need to look at carefully. And I go into it a lot in the book, because that's sort of, I mean, I don't just use that phrase, but most of the psychological input has to do with how am I going to, you know, navigate in an appropriate manner. In other words, it's not that you shouldn't be respectful to other people, but how are you supposed to, you know, what determines where these limits are? What determines the boundaries between you and me? How do you take care of yourself? These are really big challenges for all of us.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I understand where you're going, and it's interesting that you said that, because you've used that term doormat a lot, and there are people, and I definitely get what you're saying. I'm the type of person, or used to be the type of person, that I needed a doormat. I needed a
person.
Okay. Yeah. So
Because
I grew up with, okay, my father is the, and my mother is the doormat, and my father is the one that was, you know, wiping his feet on the doormat. So mm-hmm. I grew up thinking, listen, I'm going to choose either way to be, and I sure didn't want to be the doormat. So I grew into or evolved into that person that was the person that wiped their feet on the doormat. And I don't say that, you know, well, listen, that's just the way it is. I'm just being honest. But what I found is it doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel good to me to disrespect, to behave in that way towards anyone, regardless. Mm-hmm. It does not feel good to me. And so if you have met me, 15 years ago, I was hell on wheels. Just ask my ex-husband. He was the perfect doormat. And he's such a sweet, wonderful man right now. We have a really great relationship. But just being honest, there's a lot of different variables. The doormat, the person that wipes their foot, and the doormat wiper. So
but it's interesting what you're saying. Do you have the book before you? If you
yes, I do.
To page 41, I have this chart which we could sort of tell our listeners about it. I try to actually sort of analyze exactly what you say, that there is, I call it the one kind of behavior is the aggressive behavior, that's your hell on wheels type, mm-hmm. and then you've got the passive behavior, which is, you know, the doormat. And what I try to explain, and this is in Chapter 3 about being honest with yourself and taking care of yourself, that actually both of these positions, the doormat and the hell on wheels, they're both extreme and they're both dysfunctional and they're both unhealthy ways of relating to life. As you say, either one feels bad.
That's
the
right.
The attacker, the dominating person, the aggressive person, that really feels lousy. And the one who's always, you know, submissive and running away and so on, that also feels lousy. But as you see in this chart, that there is a middle point, which I call assertive behavior or the balance point, where you own your own power and you stay in your own power and you mind your own business. You can see the list there. So actually, it's really a good conversation that we're having here, because whoever, for our listeners, wherever you identify yourself on the scale, if you identify with, you know, I identify much more with the doormat, the passive, because I had a mother who was hell on wheels and a father who was a doormat, and And then I married a man who was like, and I woke up one day and said, okay, now I'm married to my mother again. So we tend to repeat these patterns until we wake up. So it's often, I mean, they go together. It's like this dance. You've got the hell on wheels person, and then you've got the doormat. That's that dance, right? So as far as I can see, the healing, the learning to come into your own power, is to understand that both of those points on the scale are really not constructive, are not loving and kind, are not, you know, a good way to navigate through life, and that when you notice either side of the scale, that you work on coming to the middle point, which is minding your own business, taking responsibility for yourself, and being able to be assertive. This book I have a lot about learning to be assertive, because whether you are the abusive person or the one being abused, both parties, again, don't know how to be assertive. Mm-hmm. And being assertive is basically learning to stay in your own business and, you know, finding out what's true and right for you, and then being able to say it in a non-threatening way to other people. I mean, that's really a very peaceful, wonderful way to live, actually. But it's so, so difficult for most of us.
It is difficult, and this is what I think. I think the reason why, I'm just going to speak for myself, but the reason why it was so difficult for me is because I never looked in the mirror. I never looked and said, okay, there's something wrong that is, there's something that is not working. There's something is not working. But at the same time, I was behaving in this, you know, bitch on wheels behavior. And I did it because, number one, I thought that controlling someone else or trying to control someone else would make me happy. Number
yeah.
two, I thought that just having my own agenda was the right agenda, and I thought that would make me happy. So it was always
mm-hmm.
quest, always this wanting to be happy. And then when I did all of this other stuff, and it never did make me happy, bossing people around and I actually have, you don't know how many people have told me, when I'm around you, I used to feel like I was walking on eggshells.
And
I'm thinking, wow, that's kind of crappy. And but I was still looking to be happy. But then I had to discover that being happy has nothing to do with other people. It really has to do with person in the mirror. And that's
it's wonderful that you're sharing this, because I think what you're describing is actually the crucial, you're talking from your own experience, and I think it's a beautiful example of what I always say is the crucial shift as we become an awakened human being. And we go from where we are projecting and we are saying that, you know, our happiness depends on something outside of us, that other people are to blame, it's other people's fault. In other words, that it's out there, that
mm-hmm.
something in the external is the cause of the way that we are feeling. And when people begin to wake up to go higher in consciousness, the first really, really dramatic and big shift is suddenly changing the focus from looking out there and pointing the finger out there and starting to look within. It's the realization that it actually has something to do with me. I mean, that is such a profound moment of transformation, and actually that's what you're talking about. There was, at some point, you started to realize that, and thank you for sharing so honestly, because that is such a momentous event in the soul's journey. I mean, without that, it's not possible to progress. I mean, I know, I always have, my joke is every time somebody walks in my door to my little therapy room, I know that just the fact that they've actually called me, they made an appointment, and they're coming here, that is a sign that they are in some way willing to start looking within and taking responsibility
mm-hmm.
for their share. It's not that, you know, that you're to blame for everything or it's your fault. It's nothing like that, but it's more that, you know, what is my part in this? What am
mm-hmm.
I doing here? And it's also, but I mean, it's also such a, as you know, such a liberating discovery, because as long as you're blaming people out there, as long as it's somebody else's fault, you basically you can't do anything about it, right? Because as you found out, you can't control other people. But when you start to own your responsibility, that's actually something that you can do something about. So even though it's very scary in a way, it's also so powerful and so liberating. So yeah, thanks for sharing that. So would you say that when you made this transformation, did it take many years, or was it did you have some specific experiences that like made you aware of what you just described?
That's a really good question, and yes, it took years. That's another thing that I, you know, I wanted a quick fix. Fix it now. Do it now. I want to be happy now.
Yeah.
I don't have time to wait. I want to be happy right now. And then what I discovered is, which is something that was also really important for me, is that evolution takes time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And so, you know, because a lot of people ask me, well, you know, when, how long, and when, I really had to get that it takes time to plant a seed, to water the seed, to fertilize the seed, and have a beautiful award-winning rose. And I mean, look at how long it took this planet to evolve, billions and billions and billions of years, and it was an ice planet, it was a hot planet, it was crashing a meteor. I mean, all of these billions of years, and so I actually slow down everything because I'm just evolving little day by day, moment by moment. I'm in no hurry. Okay, thank you. But that's another concept that I had to take that took years. I mean, that I had to get that took years.
Yeah, well, that's also so crucial what you're saying also. I mean, the fact that the people are so impatient, it also really shows, again, a lack of understanding, because when you start to realize what we're talking about, the amount of programming we have received, the whole collective consciousness, the way our society is, and the fact that nobody has really ever taught us any of this stuff. So, I mean, it's like, you know, my goodness gracious. So being a little bit, you know, kind to ourselves and being a little bit more, you know, okay, as you just said, little by little, one day at a time, and praising ourselves for this small step and this small step. And we're always going forward, even though we often feel we're going backward. But even when we go backward, we don't ever really lose the terrain that we covered. It's like it's sort of the three steps forward, two steps backward, three steps. So we're always going forward anyway. So
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
So being a little bit more spacious, you could say, a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And also you could say it's all the, you know, it's still the childish ego personality based misunderstandings that's doing the talking when we feel like that. Because the wisdom of our souls, the wise part of us that we're accessing more and more doesn't feel like that.
Right. Well, that's then now you're talking another topic. But one of the things I just want to emphasize, you said that when you start to look in the mirror and you realize that you have the power, you and you alone have this power, you have the power to create your environment, and you have the power to create what type of relationships that you will have, even with a quote-unquote dysfunctional person, you can, let me just say me, I can still create a peaceful relationship.
Well, again, I think what you're saying, I would probably say it like this. It is, you know, what's happening is what's happening, and the person out there is the way the person out there is, but our freedom lies in the way we relate to it. In other words, we can always choose, you know, how we're going to view something. So again, it really has nothing to do with what's out there. I mean, you can choose something. You can choose from the fear. You can choose from anger, from pride, from, you know, acceptance, willingness, courage, love. I mean, there are all these different positionalities, you could say, and each one creates a different experience. And it's really our, when we understand that our point of view, our interpretation is actually our experience in life. It's not really what's happening out there, because you can see that the same exact experience people have completely different reactions to the same exact experience. One person thinks it's great and they're happy, and then another person thinks, oh, it's terrible, and then they're miserable. And there's really nothing going on. It's just our story. So it's, yeah, it's definitely true. But it
wow.
doesn't mean, again, it doesn't mean that we can't take care of ourselves. So that, I think that's also where the confusion comes again. In other words, if someone is violating your boundaries, even if you, you know, say, I want to be loving and kind, that's where the confusion comes in. You can't, being loving and kind is also about taking care of yourself and saying, okay, here's the limit, you know. And be again, we are, I think part of the problem for many of us is that we're so fixated on trying to get other people's love and approval. And that's, you know, that sort of throws a monkey wrench into all of our relationships. Instead of, you know, staying home with ourselves, minding our own business, listening to the inner compass and using that to navigate, we've got our antennas, we're so much over with in other, what will they think, what will they do, what will they say, will they like me, will they think, you know, that we move away from our own integrity or authenticity or whatever you want to call it. So there's a lot of different aspects to what we're talking about right now.
Yeah, well, you're talking about, I remember someone told me, this is a couple of months ago, and I was talking about the my relationship with my mother and how sometimes it's very peaceful, and sometimes, you know, she might say something that just gets me, just want to gird, like pushes the button, and I'm thinking, okay, what is that about? Because I like to really analyze why, for me.
Mm-hmm.
What is that about? Why did what she said bother me? And I remember this woman told me, she says, what you need to do, you need to sit down, put an empty chair in front of you, and tell your mother exactly what you need from her. Tell her what you want. Tell her how you feel. Tell her all the things that you want her to hear. And when this woman told me that, I was sat there and I kind of contemplated it, okay, but it really wasn't clicking with me. It really wasn't clicking inside of me. But I got her point. She says, you know, express it all, vent to this empty chair.
Mm-hmm.
And then the universe hit me with this, because you know they talk to me. They talk to me all the time, and especially if I'm in the shower, it's their favorite place to communicate.
Mm-hmm.
And universe said, you say all those things, but all those things you want from your mother, you actually want them from yourself. You actually need them from yourself.
Yeah, absolutely.
So be okay with, and get, no, not be okay, but get all of that stuff from yourself.
Well, give me an example. You're talking pretty general. What kind of things does your mother do that freaks you out? Can you give something more concrete?
Okay, yes. Okay, let me see. Let me give you a good one. Appreciation. My mother will talk about my cousins who are very accomplished, and she talks about, she actually praises and gives compliments to everyone, the person across the street. Oh, she's such a nice lady. My son, even though he's the smartest person I know, I never get any compliments ever from my mother.
To you. Yeah.
What?
To you, right?
Yeah, exactly. Directed at me, like, and not only that, I really never received them when I was younger. It was always about what I did wrong or a lot of criticism. There was no praise. In other words, I had to get all A's, and if I got one B+, it was, why did you get the B+? It was always, you know, looking for what's wrong as opposed to what's right. And so it's a history of, and I have to say, not pointing my finger at my mother, that's what I did to myself. Looking at what's wrong, what I'm doing wrong as opposed to looking at all the good things that I have accomplished.
Yeah.
So that's one example. Do you need another one?
No, that's a beautiful one. That's a beautiful one. This desire that we all have that our mothers should understand us and should love and support us. And how's that working for you, right?
Mm-hmm.
It never worked for me. So mm-hmm. that doesn't sound like it's working too good for you either. So
no,
but again,
no.
We're still back to, you know, that we need love and approval from other people,
mm-hmm.
which is always a very, very stressful project since we can't control it and since it's none of our business what other people think about us. And so there's a lot of stuff involved in that. And I certainly understand that your preference was that your mother should love and appreciate you and support you and all that. That was definitely my preference, too, and it never happened.
Mm-hmm.
It never happened.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, I mean, I just know that, again, getting real about, you know, making peace with reality actually frees us to take better care of ourselves. And when I realized that I was never going to get it from my mom, as you say, then you find out, well, I guess it must be my job. You know, what do I think about me? Do I feel... You know, and we're talking about self-esteem. We're talking about self-worth, actually.
That's right.
As long as we feel that our self-worth is based on other people's opinion, I mean, and again, just to give ourselves a break, we grow up in a society which is so materialistic, which is so based on, you know, how thin you are, how good you look, how young you look, how much money you have in the bank, you know, how what a great husband you have or what beautiful children. I mean, we live in a society which is so, our self-worth is so based on external things. So again, it's you and me, we're just, you know, it's because of that we never learned that self-worth is something that we're born with. That
yes.
we have inherent worth because we're just children of the universe.
Yes, yeah.
And actually, the Declaration of Independence of the United States said all men and women are born with certain inalienable rights.
Right.
You know, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That's really about inherent worth.
Yeah.
You know, that we don't have to do anything to achieve it. So your whole relationship with your mother, like my whole relationship with my mother, was... You know, totally screwed up from the get go.
Yeah, well, you know, but the flip side to it is that I know for a fact. This is just I'm talking for me. I know that she is here for me for a reason, and she is here to spark growth, and she is here to help me evolve into. A person that is going to be loving towards her regardless of what she does, because her intention, you know, listen, she's a result of her upbringing, and I mean, I could go on and on and on about that, but I know that these people that are in my life, and this is just for me, that are more challenging, let's say, more challenging for me, that it just doesn't not a smooth ride. They're there for a reason, and they're there for my growth, and they're there because I created them. That's who I wanted. I mean, I really believe that that's who I wanted to be, my mother, so I could turn into this evolve into this person.
Well, that's a really, I mean, I must say that's a really good story, and it's working for you, so I would definitely keep it. I mean, you know, I always say that, like Byron Katie says, if your story is working for you, don't question it. I mean, that your mother is here for a reason for you to stimulate growth. I mean, that's a great story. And my mother's, I can certainly relate to that one, too. It gives us a little bit of peace when we think that.
Yeah, yeah. And then the other thing that I do, which is kind of a new strategy now, is putting people in their proper places. And just because she's my mother, it doesn't mean that she deserves is not a right word, but she needs to be put in a place right next to me, right at the table at my right hand. She can sit at another table, you know, a distant table, but she doesn't necessarily need to be right at the head table with me. It's kind of a game that I play.
That's great. I mean, why do you think I live so far away? That's one of the reasons. So, but putting people in the proper place, that's what you just said. That was really an interesting phrase. So what exactly do you mean by that?
I mean that if someone is in my inner circle meaning I feel an attachment, I feel an obligation, I feel those are really big. I have an agenda, and my agenda is with my mother is, you know, treat me like I want a mommy, be my mommy. So that's my agenda. It all comes back to me. I want a mommy, and why can't you be my? So if I have an agenda with someone, or I feel obligated, then I know that their place is not in my inner circle. Because if they are in my inner circle, and I have these emotions or these attachments, that means that it's going to affect me. And so I've got to, it's like a five-year-old. Am I going to put a five-year-old behind the wheel? No, I'm not going to put a five-year-old behind the wheel of a car, because they're not equipped. So my mother is not equipped with her limited ways of loving, and I'm just, you know, using words to describe it. So she's not equipped to really be inside the circle, because she can't love me unconditionally.
Getting real about it. Yeah. Well, actually, I think what you're saying is really interesting. It's you're really saying that it's a good thing to notice that people are at different stages of development, and that people are, you know, we're not talking about good and bad, right or wrong, or worthy or not worthy. We're just talking about being aware of the fact that the level of consciousness is different. And that obviously you have a mother who's not into all this stuff and is awake, aware, so self-conscious as you are. I mean, that's getting real about it. And that means also, I would say, putting people in their proper place is more like a recognition of, you know, who is this person? Where are they in their level of consciousness, their development, their interests, and, you know, what's relevant here for me? So it's probably not relevant for you to share or have expectations to your mother that are not based on the reality of who she is and how developed or conscious she is as a person.
Exactly.
That's what I'm hearing, I think. Yeah.
Exactly. That's exactly what I'm saying.
That gives a lot of peace also just to understand that. And it also gives a lot of peace, I think. One of the laments that people have when they come to me, and I've also experienced it myself, of course, is that as you become more, you know, spiritually evolved and are working on what, there's less and less people that you can hang out with, in the sense that there are not that many people who share this interest. It's still a minority of people on the planet who are awakening in the way that you and I are doing. That's getting real about it. Again, it's not a criticism. It's just a statement of, you know, the way things are.
Mm-hmm.
And so you feel, you know, it's like, you know, certain activities that, you know, a lot of people do that you're just not interested in doing anymore. It doesn't mean that the activities are wrong in any way. It's just you're not there anymore.
Exactly.
Yeah. And that, of course, can make it confusing with family, because you think, okay, I want to be close, I want to have something to talk about, but the reality is you're on different wavelengths.
Yes, the reality is we speak a different language. I even go down to speaking different languages.
Mm-hmm.
I just say that, she speaks a totally different language than me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know what, when I talk, because believe it or not, Barbara, I talk to her almost every day.
Really? Does she live close to you?
No, she lives in Las Vegas. She lives in Las Vegas, and it's just about 4 hours. But I talk to her every day because she lives alone. But this is what's happened. So I've had to change. I had to limit. I cannot limit what she's going to say. She's going to say whatever she's going to do and do. But I can control how long I stay on the phone. I can control what I share with her, because believe me, after all of these years, I know what I'm going to say if I say something, and she's going to have a response. So I'm limited to what I say, consciously limited, and just to keep everything light, nothing deep, nothing spiritual, nothing, you know, just listen and keep it light and keep it moving. And I love you, Mommy, and I'll talk to you soon. I love you. And our relationship is actually the best it's ever been, only because I've realized how to communicate with her that's going to give, that's going to bring more peace.
Well, that, if that works for you, then it sounds like you've got a good recipe for success with your mom.
Yeah. I'm not saying that. There's a couple of hiccups sometimes, you know, Maybe I didn't get enough sleep, or maybe I didn't have enough, a little shot of something before I called.
It's also having realistic expectations, right? I mean, again, your expectations are, that's what you're saying, that you limit what you say, you have a more realistic assessment of who she is, you have a more realistic assessment of who you are, you have a more realistic assessment of the fact that she doesn't understand and she's not going to understand and she probably never will understand, and that if you're looking for understanding, you're looking in the wrong place.
Thank you.
Isn't that a big relief?
Yes.
Then you don't have to be angry. You know, then you don't have to be angry. You can say, you know, I'm looking in the wrong place.
That's right. So. That's right. I'm looking in the wrong place. I should be looking in the mirror.
Yeah. So anyway, my book, Are You Happy Now, is a lot about actually what you're just saying, looking in the mirror, looking in the right place. You know, well, what are we doing? What are we doing that is preventing us from being happy right now? And this whole story with you and your mom is a great example of, you know, adjusting our expectations, being more realistic about, you know, whose business is whose business, figuring out what your own needs and wants are, learning, you know, what is a really realistic expectation of this relationship, understanding that you love your mom even though you don't understand her and she doesn't understand you, and that you'll probably never be in agreement about a lot of things, but that, you know, that's actually one of the things in this book that I think people think is very interesting, to notice that love and agreement are actually two different things. That's also such a big relief, because if you have the story that if you love me, you'll understand me, or if you love me, you'll do what I want, those kind of stories are, they make relationships really difficult. Because if you notice that the reality is you love a lot of people and they definitely don't agree with you and they don't do what you want, and when you see that, it's like, you know, what's love got to do with it? Really nothing.
Absolutely. Well, you know, the whole definition, I don't know if I shared this with you, but in 2007, my mother disinherited me. And I still
haven't shared that. No.
Yeah,
okay.
She disinherited me. My father was on his maybe the last year and a half before he died. And, of course, he would have never done that because I was daddy's little girl. But, yeah, she disinherited. And I'm still disinherited now.
Ah. For what reason?
For the reason when my father wasn't able to, well, you know, he went through this, it's parallels Alzheimer's, it's called hydrocephalitis, and so he lost his memory, wasn't able to take care of himself. In the last year and a half, he lived in a convalescent home, but the interesting thing is, before he got to the convalescent home, my mother had him in the house with her, and she had him in his bedroom in a dark room, and he was dying. My father was dying. He got down to 114 pounds. We had the hospice people come in, and my mother has never, listen, I'm not going to make this into a whole story, a whole family story, but my father was down to 114 pounds, and I said, Mom, he's a social guy. He needs to be out. He needs to be with people. At least put him in the living room where you can see people, you can see you walking back and forth. She had him in his own bedroom, and so he was wasting away. Sent him to a hospice facility where they gave him 2 weeks to live. 2 weeks to live. Mm-hmm. And because of the nurses, because of the care, because he was, you know, people around, he was kicked out of hospice.
Okay, so he revived.
He revived. He was kicked out of hospice, and he lived for another year and a half after that. Bottom line is, my mother has always been this woman that loves to spend money, and she was hooked on QVC, which is a home shopping network. She was spending money left and right. You know, it was a a reason because, you know, my father, she wasn't very good at accepting reality. And so that was her coping mechanism. Some people drink, some people, you know, choose food, and she shops. And so while she was out, I called the credit card companies and I got all of her credit cards stopped, cut. I mean, I'm talking about thousands of dollars a month. Stopped, cut up, and I did this behind her back, trying to control. I was in her business. I have my left hand up right now. Yes, it was all my fault. I caused all this. So when she found out, she disinherited me. And
exciting.
And adventure. Yeah, and so when I went to my father's service, he died in 2008, she was still hadn't talked to me. So I see her at the service, my father's service. She's flanked by my two cousins, the one I told you she's always praising. And I hadn't seen my mother. This is the first year that I've seen her in 6 years. She wouldn't allow me back into her home. Because she said she didn't trust me. She didn't trust me. She couldn't trust me. She couldn't trust me in her home. She couldn't trust me because I went behind her back and I got into her affairs and I wasn't minding my own business.
Interesting story. Oh, we can pick up on that on our next show.
Oh, gosh. Is it over now? Is it over? Oh, my gosh, Barbara.
I think we're running out of time, sweetheart.
Yeah, I know. Well, I want to say thank you so much for being on Reality Spirituality. And you will hear Barbara Berger live every the last Tuesday of every month until January 2014. We actually planned a show for January 2014, the last Tuesday of every month. Barbara Berger will be live. And her new book, Are You Happy Now? 10 Ways to Live a Happy Life. You can find her at beamteam.com. Barbara, as usual, it is a pleasure having you on Reality Spirituality.
Thank you for inviting me. We will continue to be continued. This episode will continue next month, right?
Yes.
Month
and would
now.
You like to share with your audience how they can get in contact with you and your email address?
You can go into the website, beamteam.com, and you can see the contact information there, info@beamteam.com. Please contact me if you would like to talk to me. I also do sessions by Skype if anyone would like to talk to me. I have people from around the world that I talk to, so that's great fun.
Ooh, how fun.
And there's a lot of resources on the website you can download for free. As you know, the mental laws, there's some guided meditations you can download for free. There's a lot of material there that you can look at and enjoy.
I love that. And I didn't share this with you, but the chat room is open and we have so many people in the chat room and they're just saying, great show. Can't wait till next month. Barbara Berger, I have her book. So we have a lot of activity going on here.
Barbara
Berger, Reality Spirituality.
Thank you so much. God bless you and God bless everyone out there. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Barbara. Talk to you soon.
Okay. Yeah.
Love you. Bye.
Yeah.
Well, that was Barbara Berger live on Reality Spirituality. And like I said, she will be live the last Tuesday of every month. Barbara Berger live on Reality Spirituality. I want to thank you for listening and let you know about if you want to contact me, you can go to www.RebeccaNorrington.com, RebeccaNorrington.com. If you'd like my free monthly newsletter, please send an email to info@RebeccaNorrington.com. You can follow me on Twitter at RL Norrington. And if you like the show, go to Facebook and like Reality Spirituality. Until next time, my dear audience, I just want you to remember who the hell you are. You are a physical extension of the universe. You are a physical extension of the universe. You are always evolving. You're always changing. You're always growing. Love is patient and love is kind. Be patient and be kind to yourself. Be your own best friend. Remember, You cannot have a happy ending to an unhappy journey. Let's connect again on Saturday. Reality Spirituality is heard every Saturday and Sunday, 7 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. You've been listening to Reality Spirituality. Thank you. Love you all. Bye.
Yeah. Oh, it's time to get real. Oh, yeah.
All the spirituality.
It's a new experience.
All the spirituality.
Yeah, keep your ears open for this one, man.
Get
real.